Welcome to the deep dive. Looks like you sent us a pretty fascinating collection of stuff about the different interpretations of the days in Genesis 1. We got lecture notes, biblical excerpts, even some quotes from early church fathers. This will be fun.
It's really quite amazing how much discussion and debate has centered around just this one little word, yomah, the Hebrew word for day.
Right. And it's not just like some small theological detail, right? I mean, it really gets to the heart of how we understand the very foundation of the world.
Exactly. Yeah, understanding yom, it can change how we view like the whole timeline of creation and even how we interpret the Bible, like the Bible itself.
Okay, so let's just dive right in then. What are these days in Genesis 1? Like, what do they really represent? I mean, are we talking about literal 24-hour periods, or is it something else, something entirely
Well,
different?
the sources you send, they show us there's really no easy answer. People have been coming up with, different theories practically since Genesis was written.
Wow, really? Since then. Okay, well, let's start with the foundation then. Yom is the Hebrew word for day, but like, is it always meant literally? I mean, we've got the lecture notes from Robert Vannoy here, and he points out that yom isn't always as straightforward as we might think.
And Vannoy, he highlights that Yom actually has like a range of meanings in the Old Testament. Sometimes it refers to a literal 24-hour day, but other times it's used more figuratively, like when we say like back in my grandfather's day.
Oh, okay. I see. So there's already some built-in flexibility then to the word itself. Vinoy also points out that the sun and moon, they aren't even mentioned until day four of creation. So that makes a strict 24-hour day interpretation kind of tricky, doesn't it?
It certainly complicates things. I mean, how can you have a solar day before you even have a sun, right? I
Right.
mean, it's one of the clues that suggests we might need to think beyond a literal interpretation here.
Okay. And then there's the sixth day, where so much happens. The creation of land animals, Adam and Eve, naming the animals, even Adam realizing his uniqueness. It seems like trying to squeeze all of that into one 24-hour day just seems, I don't know, a little ambitious at least.
Yeah, Vannoy definitely makes that point. It would be a very, very busy day, even for the creator. And then there's the seventh day, the Sabbath, where God rests. Vannoy argues that this rest has actually continued to the present day, so that implies a much, much longer time frame.
So Vannoy seems to be pointing us towards the idea that these days could represent like much longer stretches of time.
Yeah, it's certainly a possibility to kind of help navigate these various theories about the days. I think it helps to divide them up into two main categories. You have the actual day theories, and then you have the non-actual day theories.
Okay, hold on. What exactly do those terms mean? I want to make sure I'm following you here.
Sure. So, actual day theories, they propose that the days represent like a real periods of time, even if there's debate about their length. You know, it could be a literal 24-hour day or a much, much longer period.
Okay, so non-actual day would be.
Non-actual day theories would be interpretations where the days are seen as primarily like symbolic or literary devices not tied to a strict historical timeline.
So it's not even just about like how long a day is, but whether it's even meant to be a measurement of time at all.
You got it. Now let's start by exploring those actual day theories. Vannoy outlines three main approaches within this category.
All right, hit me. What's the most straightforward interpretation?
Well, the first one is the most literal. Seven successive 24-hour days, just as the text seems to initially describe.
Okay, but wouldn't that run into problems with like the events before the sun was created, like we talked about earlier?
That's right. That's a key challenge for this interpretation, and it's where the second approach comes in. It's known as the restitution or the gap theory.
So imagine a vast period of time, a gap between the initial creation in Genesis 1.1 and the earth becoming formless and void in verse 1.2.
So there's an initial act of creation, and then something happens, and then things get all chaotic.
That's the idea. Proponents of the gap theory suggest the 6 days of creation are actually a recreation, a divine restoration project. This gap could account for millions of years of geological history.
Ah, so that's how they try to reconcile the biblical account with the scientific evidence
Right.
of an older Earth.
Yep.
That's pretty clever. What about the third approach?
So the third approach is the interperiod theory. This one suggests that that lengthy periods existed between each of those six 24-hour days. Think of it like as a hybrid, where you have the literal 24-hour days, but they're separated by these vast stretches of time.
So each 24-hour day is like a punctuation mark in a much larger story. That's a good way to put it. Van Eyck also mentions a variation of this theory from a theologian named Dr. Newman, who proposes that each 24-hour day acts as a sort of kickoff event for a much, much longer period of creative activity.
Okay, so the 24-hour day marks the beginning, and then the real work begins. Okay, so that covers the actual day theories, where the days represent, you know, some period of time. But I feel like things are going to get even more interesting when we move into the non-actual day theories, where the days are more symbolic.
Oh, yeah. You are in for a treat. We're about to enter a realm of symbolism and allegory, exploring how early church fathers interpreted these days. Are you ready to dive in?
Absolutely. Bring it on.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're moving away from those literal days now, and it's all about symbolism and allegory. So how did those early church fathers, how did they view the days of Genesis?
Oh, they had some really fascinating interpretations. Van Eyck, he highlights the perspectives of a few key thinkers, and starting with Origen. He was a brilliant theologian and philosopher who lived in Alexandria, in Egypt, in like the second and third centuries.
Oh yeah, Alexandria. That was like a real hub of intellectual activity back then. So what was Origen's take on the days of creation?
Well, Origen, he believed that creation happened instantaneously in a single glorious moment. For him, those 6 days, they represent a logical order of creation, not a chronological one.
So it's like a blueprint then.
Right.
Showing the intentional design behind creation rather than a step-by-step timeline.
Exactly, yeah. And he wasn't afraid to really challenge that literal view. In fact, Van Eyck, he quotes Origen saying, you know, it's pretty hard to imagine a first day or second day before the sun, moon, and stars even existed.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. If you're going by evening and morning, you need the sun and moon first, right?
Yeah. Origen is definitely thinking outside the box, but he wasn't the only early church father with a unique interpretation. Augustine, who lived a couple centuries after Origen, he also saw the days of Genesis as symbolic.
Oh yeah, Augustine. That's a huge name in Christian theology. So what was his take on all this?
Okay, so Augustine's view is a little bit more mystical. He believed the days actually symbolized the spiritual experiences of creatures praising God in response to creation. So it's less about a physical process unfolding and more about the inner experience of creation.
That's a really different way of looking at it. So for Augustine, it's more about the emotional and spiritual response to creation than the actual mechanics of it.
Yeah, precisely. It's an allegorical approach, focused on the internal experience rather than that external form. But we're not quite done with the non-actual day theories just yet. Van Eyck also mentions the revelational day theory, though it's not as widely accepted.
Okay, what's that all about?
So this one suggests that the 6 days represent the time it took God to reveal the creation story to Moses, who, according to tradition, you know, wrote the book of Genesis. So it kind of shifts the focus from what God did to how that knowledge was communicated to humanity.
So instead of focusing on the actual events of creation, it's about the process of God revealing those events to Moses.
Exactly. The days become more about the unveiling of the creation narrative than the creation itself.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah.
Now, for the grand finale of our non-actual day exploration, we have the framework hypothesis. I've heard a bit about this one. It seems pretty popular these days.
Yeah, it is. And for good reason. It offers a very compelling and thought-provoking approach to all of this.
Yeah.
This theory suggests that the days are like a literary framework, a stylistic choice to highlight key themes rather than a strict historical sequence.
Okay, so the author of Genesis is structuring the text to emphasize certain ideas about God and creation and humanity.
Exactly. One of the key thinkers behind this theory, a Dutch theologian named N.H. Ritterbos, he argues that the 6 days are actually arranged in 2 sets of 3 days, which he calls tridems.
Tridems, okay.
Yeah, and each tridem has this parallel structure.
Okay, I need an example here. How does this parallelism work?
Okay, so take days 1 and 4. On day one, you have the creation of light, and then on day four, you have the creation of the sun, moon, and stars, the things that give us light.
Okay, so they're like counterparts.
Yeah, exactly.
What about the other days?
Well, on day two, you have the separation of the waters, creating the firmament, the sky. And then on day five, you have the creatures that fill those spaces, birds and fish.
And on day three, you have dry land appears along with plants. And on day six, we get land animals and finally humans.
You got it. It's like a carefully crafted, like a literary mirror. Winterbus, he points out that each of those eight creative acts in Genesis, they all begin with that phrase, and God said.
Yeah.
And two of those acts, they occur on day three, and two occur on day six, which, further highlights this parallel structure.
So there's this, like, intricate literary design woven throughout the creation account. It makes you kind of appreciate the artistry of the text on a whole new level.
Absolutely. However, not everyone buys into this framework interpretation. Van Noy mentions a theologian named Oliver Buswell, who, while he acknowledges the cleverness of the parallelism, he remains skeptical.
Yeah.
He compares it to seeing faces in the clouds. Mm. You know, you can find patterns if you look hard enough, but are they really there?
So are we forcing a pattern onto the text that wasn't intended, or is it genuinely there? It's a tough one.
It is. Buswell worries that while the framework approach might seem to resolve conflict with scientific findings, it might also be imposing like an external agenda on the text.
It seems like there's this constant tension between staying true to the text and making sense of it in light of what we know about the world.
You've hit on a really key point, and that tension really lies at the heart of this whole debate about the days of Genesis.
Okay, so we've explored this wide range of interpretations from little 24-hour days to vast ages to symbolic frameworks. It's incredible how much variety there is in the ways people have understood these days over time.
It really speaks to that enduring power and complexity of the creation story, wouldn't you say? What I find fascinating is that we're still having this conversation today, thousands of years after Genesis was written.
Yeah, it's true. This ancient text, it's still relevant. It's still challenging us, and it's still prompting us to grapple with these big questions about the universe and our place in it.
You know, it's not just about finding that right answer. It's about the journey of exploration and discovery. And that's what makes studying these ancient texts so rewarding.
I couldn't agree more. We've covered a lot of ground in our deep dive into the days of Genesis, from literal 24-hour days to symbolic frameworks. I mean, it's amazing how many different ways people have interpreted this part of the creation story.
Yeah, and what's fascinating is that each of these interpretations, it reflects a different way of understanding the relationship between faith and science.
That's right. We started with the most literal interpretations, like the idea of those seven consecutive 24-hour days. Mm-hmm. That's the view that a lot of people are familiar with.
Right. And it's certainly a valid interpretation. But as we saw, it raises some questions, especially when you consider the events that that take place before the sun and moon are even created on the fourth day.
Exactly. And that's where those alternative actual day theories come into play, like the gap theory and the interperiod theory. They try to reconcile a literal reading of the days with the scientific evidence suggesting, an older Earth.
Right. Those theories, they propose that those days could represent much, much longer periods, allowing for geological time and even the fossil record.
Okay. And then we moved into the realm of non-actual day theories, where the days are seen more as symbolic or literary devices. Some of those interpretations from those early church fathers like Origen and Augustine were really mind-blowing.
Yeah, they viewed the days as representing the logical order of creation, or even as a reflection of the spiritual experiences of creation. It's fascinating how they found deeper layers of meaning beyond a strict historical timeline.
And then we explored the framework hypothesis, which sees those days as a literary structure that's designed to highlight these key themes, like God's orderliness and the importance of Sabbath rest.
Right. The framework hypothesis, it emphasizes the artistry of the text itself, pointing out those intricate parallels between the first 3 days and the last 3 days of creation.
Okay. But even with all of these different interpretations, there's no single right answer. that everyone agrees on.
And that's okay. The point isn't necessarily to find the one definitive interpretation. What's more important is that process of wrestling with these ideas and engaging in thoughtful discussion.
So it's about expanding our understanding of the text and exploring different perspectives on the relationship between faith and science.
Exactly. So what does all of this mean for you, the listener? Which interpretation of the days resonates most with you? And why? What does your preferred understanding reveal about how you approach the relationship between the Bible and the world around us?
These are big questions.
Yeah.
And the answers are personal. Maybe one of the theories we explored today resonated with you. Or maybe you have a completely different interpretation.
Yeah.
The point is, keep thinking, keep questioning, and keep exploring.
Yeah. The days of Genesis are just one example of how these, you know, ancient texts can spark these ongoing conversations. They invite us to think critically, to wrestle with challenging ideas, and to find new ways of understanding our place in the universe.
This deep dive has been an incredible journey of discovery. Thank you for joining us as we explore these fascinating and complex ideas together. Until next time.